The Jewish Heritage Foundation presents The Light of the Eternal People, an in-depth study of Jewish thought and practice based on original source material given by Rav Shmuel Irons, Rosh HaKolel, Dean of the Kolel Institute of Greater Detroit, one of the leading centers of Talmudic research and community education in North America. This lecture, titled How to Handle Conflict and Manage Anger, is dedicated to the memory and le'ilui nishmos Reb Isser Elchonim b'Reb Avram Abba, u'perol bas Reb Eliezer, aleihem asholem, Mr. and Mrs. Irving and Pearl Zeff of blessed memory.
It's a scene that's repeated millions of times a day, every day. After many years of school, hard work, and physical and emotional deprivation for you, your spouse, and your children, you're still stuck in a job that saps your strength, tests your nerves, and leaves you frustrated and broken. You're growing older, you're not making the money you feel you need and deserve, and you're not receiving the recognition and appreciation that you're dying for. And you're angry. You're angry at your fellow workers who put in less time and are better off than you. You're angry at your boss for not giving you the raise that he knows you deserve. You're angry at customers, clients, or patients who only complain and don't begin to appreciate all that you're doing for them. You're angry at a world that has cheated you and made you their slave. And you're angry because you know that you have to hold all that anger in. You're painfully aware that if you actually let it out and expressed all of your inner rage and gave them, your boss, co-workers, or customers, what they truly deserve, the consequences would be disastrous. After a hard and frustrating day, you long to go to the one place on earth where you're really loved and appreciated, home. And that's where the real trouble begins. Your spouse also had a hard day, and it shows. The house is in an uproar, the kids need disciplining, supper's no way in sight. You're tired, hungry, impatient, and mad. And this time you let it all out. Your kids and spouse bear the brunt of all of your pent-up anger and frustration. And for a fleeting moment, it feels good. You finally put them in their place. You showed them who really is in charge. And at last you found the only place on earth where you're really boss. But just as you're beginning to calm down and feel like a real somebody, you get it back in spades. From all sides, you hear the explosion of the pent-up anger, resentment of a household that needs patience and not criticism, love and not anger. Amidst the yelling and name-calling and threats of leaving the house, you realize that your precious previous victory was a shallow one, and you're really worse off than before. So what's the answer? How are you supposed to control all of your pent-up anger and resentment? How do you deal effectively with all the ever-growing feelings of frustration that destroying you and those you really love? The answer to these questions, and much more, will be covered in this lecture. I've divided this lecture into 9 parts. The first letter of each part, spelling out the words, as you see on your sheets, anger and calm. First, the A spells anger. To fully understand the dynamics of anger, we have to ask ourselves 5 questions. And these are the basic 5 standard questions that one always asks oneself when doing research. What, why, who, when, and how. What is the definition of anger? Why do we get angry? Or in other words, what situations trigger anger? Who gets angry? When, if ever, is it proper to get angry? And finally, how should we properly handle the stress in our lives and control our anger? First, the what. What exactly is anger? The definitions vary. Webster defines anger as a strong feeling of displeasure and usually of antagonism. According to Webster, the words ire, rage, fury, indignation, and wrath are all closely related to the word anger. But what exactly is anger? How does it differ from its synonyms? Webster doesn't tell us. Aristotle, on the other hand, defined anger as, quote, an impulse attended with pain to avenge an undeserved slight which was openly manifest to ourselves or friends. It would seem, however, that Aristotle's definition is a bit too narrow. We seem to be angry over a lot more things than just the slights of friends or oneself. The truth is that the English word anger is closely related to the Yiddish or German word ink, which means confined or pressing. In other words, anger is the reaction of being pushed around or squeezed into a corner. This is our reaction. We're pressed. We feel the word angst, by the way, is related to this, to anger and ink. We feel pressed. We feel limited. We feel confined. We want to push out. Why do we get angry? Psychologists explain that anger is an animal's emotional response to a threat. When an animal feels threatened, it must make a choice whether to fight or to flee or flight. The emotion of fear is associated with flight. Anger is associated with fight. Have you ever seen anger in a dog? Bristling, snarling, exposed teeth, growling, crouching, and lunging gestures of a male dog towards another strange male dog who dares uninvited to enter his turf. You get a feeling what anger is. We humans, like dogs, have similar physiological reactions to the threats that produce in us an intense anger or rage. Pupils are dilated or constricted. Palms become sweaty. Adrenaline is pumped into the blood. The heart rate and respiration are altered. Sphincters are controlled. And blood is pumped from one part of the body to another. Research has shown that anger increases gastric movement and secretions, together with blood engorgement, all factors, by the way, that contribute to ulcers. Unlike an animal, however, we react not only to physical threats, but to emotional threats as well. We feel cheated, manipulated, undermined, or rejected. Our sense of emotional well-being and self-worth is being threatened. And like the animal that is physically threatened, we react. The emotion of anger is our way of reasserting ourselves to show and feel that we are someone to reckon with. In other words, don't push me around. What kind of situations trigger anger? And I'd like you to turn to the second page now. In paragraph A, we have a quote from Ovos. from Ethics of the Fathers. Rabbi Elazar HaKapper says, jealousy, lust, and glory remove a man from the world. The commentators explain that the world they're referring to is both this world and the next world. We could sum up jealousy, lust, and glory into three P's. P for power, the P for pleasure, and the P of pride. Anger is triggered whenever we feel that our power or wealth, pleasure or love, pride or honor, sense of worth is being threatened and limited. These three areas, jealousy, which is our sense of control, possession, lust, our desire for pleasure, and glory, our desire for recognition, are what fuels a human being. And it fuels him out of this world. Because after all, we can't get enough. We can't get enough power. We can't get enough pleasure. And we can't get enough honor. And we always have a certain sense of frustration. That frustration where we can't get our way, where we don't feel to be the person we'd like to be, or we don't get the pleasure we want, creates anger. To summarize, what is anger? The feeling of displeasure associated with a threat on our physical and emotional well-being when we are made squeezed or confined. Why do we get angry? Or what are the most common specific emotional triggers of anger? These are the three P's. And I'd like to tell you a story which combines the three P's. Again, remember, power, pleasure, pride. And this is a story that's told by Vice President Al Gore about the former Senator Bill Bradley. Bill Bradley was once sitting at a prestigious dinner, and he was being served, and on his plate he was given potatoes, amongst other things, with a pat of butter. He turned to the waiter and said, "Sir, I'd like to have another pat of butter." And the waiter replied, "No." To which Senator Bradley replied, "Do you know who you're speaking to?" "No." "My name is Bill Bradley. I happen to have been a Rhodes Scholar." Those are the privileged few that are awarded a scholarship to study in Oxford University. "I also was a star basketball player." In fact, Bill Bradley is in the Basketball Hall of Fame. "I'm also the senator from New Jersey." And he began telling the waiter all his prestigious positions and subcommitteeships and committeeships, to which the waiter replied, "And do you know who I am?" And the senator said, "No, I'm the man that controls the butter." Who gets angry? In other words, we started off with what anger is. This is why people get angry. Who gets angry? The answer is everybody does. Stress, aggravation, and frustration are all part of everyday life. It reminds me of the story of the comedian Sam Levinson, who used to say, you know, his parents were immigrants. They spoke Yiddish in the home. But they told the kids that they in no way should they speak Yiddish outside the home. immigrants, wanted to make sure that they assimilate into American society. And for that reason, until he reached well into adulthood, Sam Levinson never said the word aggravation outside his home, because he was sure it was a Yiddish word. The gispet, I saw you feel aggravation all along. He says, aggravation is a common word in any language. We all get angry, but we react in different ways. Again, if you on page 2 of your notes, again, we quote from another place in Ovos. This is now in chapter 5, Mishnah 11. There are 4 types of temperament. A, one who is easy to become angry and easy to be pacified. One who is hard to anger, hard to pacify. One who is hard to anger and easy to pacify. One who is easy to become angry and hard to become pacified. And as you see in the Mishnah, each one is given a different title. But even the most pious do get angry. Hard, and they're easily pacified, but there are times they do get angry. And anger does serve a purpose, like everything else with us. The key is not to stamp out anger, but it's to control it and to find the right balance. And I'd like to get to the bottom of page 2. We quote from Maimonides, the great medieval scholar. This is on paragraph D after the Hebrew. And Maimonides is describing the straight path, the path we're all required to follow. And he says the straight path is a middle measure of every single personality trait. This is the trait that's midway between the two extremes and not closer to any one of the extremes. There are exceptions to this. It doesn't necessarily always mean exactly the midpoint, but it's not one of the extremes. Therefore, the early sages commanded us that a person should constantly take stock of his character traits and adjust them that they be constantly in the middle in order that the person be complete in the personality traits of his person. This actually, it's one of the commandments of the Torah, one of the key commandments of the Torah, that one should modify and transform one's personality. And he gives an example. For instance, he should not be an indignant person easy to anger, nor like a dead person who doesn't feel at all, but rather he should be in the middle. He should only be angry for something of great import for which it is befitting to be angry, in order that the person who is the object of his anger shouldn't do this repulsive act another time. The Rambam defines anger is used as a means of discouraging behavior. And of course, you're only angry if you assume that it's going to work. We discussed earlier, and this was the quote from Ovos, that there are different kinds of personalities. The requirement, though, is we are required to change our personalities. We may be born one way, but the Torah views us, in a sense, as semi-plastic. We can change. And the Rambam, here on the top of page 3, prescribes a regimen of change. And one of the examples he uses is anger. Again, this is on the top of page 3. How should a person heal himself of a character flaw? If he is prone to anger, we tell him to go to the opposite extreme. I mean, even if he were to be hit or cursed, he shouldn't express any feelings. He should go in this way for an extended time till he uproots the anger from his heart. In other words, the Rambam, the doctor, the psychologist, prescribes for his patients How do you change yourself? Go to the other extreme. Not forever, but until the point that you have yourself under control. What's interesting about anger is that the Ramban is not satisfied. Maimonides is not satisfied by leaving the person what we would call the middle road. But he continues on this paragraph F. He continues on to say that anger, and he said, even though there are times that anger is proper, but anger is akin to an atom bomb. There are times that it could be used. Most times it shouldn't be used. And he says, anger is a terrible personality trait, and it is befitting for a person to distance himself from it to the extent that he reaches the other extreme. He should train himself not to be angry even for something that is normally appropriate to respond with anger. This is what we call Midas Chassidus. One is extra pious. One goes beyond the letter of the law. The letter of the law is there are times that one should be angry. The fear is that can one use his anger as a physician would use a laser beam with precision? Or is always the fear? You may spread it out a little bit. You become angry where you shouldn't be angry. And the Rambam, therefore, has a problem. As he pointed out, there are times that it's appropriate to be angry. It's appropriate just to show that you care, that you fight back. But on the other hand, there's the problem. You may overdo it. So the Rambam suggests what we should do is become actors. This was 800 years before Hollywood. If he wants his children or household or the community, if you were a communal leader, to be afraid of him, and he wants to make a display of anger so they repent, he should act as if he were angry with them so that he will be able to influence them. But he should actually remain calm. This is akin to an actor who is playing the part of someone who is angry. There's a quote from the Gaon of Vilna. It says that if you feel you have to physically discipline your children, never do it when you're emotionally involved, when you're really angry. Gets out of hand. Who knows what you could do to your children? You can only discipline your children when you're calm and act the part. It's really based on the same idea. Getting back to the Rambam's original thesis that the idea of life is to achieve balance, this doesn't just go to understanding how one resolves one's character conflicts. But really it goes through all of life. I mean, this is not the venue to go through this theme in great length. But the idea of balance is really the cornerstone of Judaism. Think about it. We have all kinds of conflicts. We have the conflict that we have to make a living. We have to be creative. We also have the conflict that we need time for ourselves. We need time to pull back. We need time to come in touch with our spirituality. What's the balance the Torah creates? That's Shabbos. One day of every week, we go back. We leave our work, we leave our creativity, and we come back to our families and ourselves. The same thing applies really to everything the Torah deals with. Marriage. We have strong impulses. The Torah really creates guidelines. There are situations that are not acceptable. Adultery, incest. There are situations which are not only preferred, but are encouraged. Marriage. And here we've taken our instinct for love and channeled it. Again, a balance between that which is unrestricted and that which is focused. According to Jewish philosophers, In a certain sense, nothing on this earth, at least in a certain portion, is intrinsically evil. It's the balance that's evil. Love has a place. Hatred has a place. Work has a place. Rest has a place. Everything has a place. The kunz is, the trick is to find the balance. And when one comes back to one's personality, again, the idea is balance. There are times that anger is warranted. But as Raimonides points out, it's only warranted in a very narrow swath of situations of life. And that's why it has to be handled with great care. I'd like to continue on now, after we've discussed just in broad terms about anger. Four reasons why you should not be angry. And we continue on, this on page 3, with N, for neurosis. If you're angry, you're miserable. An angry person is a lonely person. On the bottom of page 3, we quote the Gemara, Talmud Psachim, in 103b. There are three whose life is not a life. One of them is a person who's constantly angry. On top of page 4, we have another quote. This is from the Talmud Nedarim in 22a. It literally makes you sick. You suffer from abdominal problems, problems of the colon. We know that stress causes hypertension, which is a major product in heart, a factor in heart disease, kidney disease, and stroke. Research has found a link between diabetes and suppressed anger, as well as with cancer and respiratory illness, such as asthma. In other words, from a physical point of view, it behooves us to do something about our anger before it kills us. The next letter I have on page 4 is G. For the anger, we had A is for anger, N is for neurosis, G is for godliness. It kills our spirit. A person who's angry, on the bottom of page 4, is considered in the eyes of the Talmud, passage in Shabbos in 105b, is as if he worshipped idols. You know, one of the therapies that was commonplace in the 60s, in the age of experimentation, was the primal scream therapy. You know, just let it all out. You know, take all this frustration, just scream. And like the story we began the lecture with, it may feel good for a moment. What it does do, though, besides the momentary feeling of ecstasy, the let it all out, is what you do is you create an addiction of sorts. Because you become addicted to letting out your frustration because you can't control it anymore. Every time there's a frustration and it reaches this peak, you just let it out. But after a while, the trigger of what will trigger this anger changes. It takes a lot less to trigger the anger. And every time you trigger it, just let it all out. Until finally, and this is the passage of the Talmud, you have no resistance, you have no self-control. Eventually, you become worship of idols. In order to be a godly person, a person has to realize that really we are created, and we have two parts of ourselves. We have a spirit, and we have a body. The spirit controls the body, or should control the body. But we, again, this is a theme that we've gone over constantly throughout all these lectures. What we are is a spirit. after our body dies, one of the most fundamental teachings of Judaism is our spirit remains. And the relationship that we, our spirit, our consciousness, which is spiritual, has with our body is akin to the relationship we have with our cars. Ever go into a car, open the door, sit down, you buckle yourself in, you turn the car on. The car cannot function without you. You can't get any place without the car. But you have a life outside the car. Our consciousness, our spirit, has a life outside our bodies. We occupy our bodies. We, like the car, we drive our bodies. But we can't have our bodies drive us. Once that starts happening, we cease to be a truly spiritual being. And that's really the concern that the Talmud has about anger. On page 5, on paragraph E, quote from the Talmud, from the Gemara Nedarim, 22b. This is on paragraph E. He who loses his temper, even the divine presence, is unimportant in his eyes. Because when you get angry, your whole impulse is, I am in charge and nothing else matters. And you're totally wrapped up in yourself. Lose control. That's the antithesis of a spiritual person. So what you lose is N, your nerves, as a neurosis. You lose G, your godliness. E, the next letter of anger, 5, is error. You lose your intellect. Because when you're so involved with your anger and your emotion, you lose yourself. And here we quote some paragraph A after the E of error. If a person becomes angry, he forgets his learning and waxes even more stupid. And the next quote, this is from the Gemara Pesachim 66b, is to every man who becomes angry, if he's a sage, his wisdom departs from him. In the lecture I gave, How to Boost Your IQ, we pointed out that in order to think, you have to be happy. You have to be calm. An angry person cannot exercise his full intellect. R is for relationships. When you're angry again, you destroy yourself, you destroy your spirit, you destroy your intellect, and you destroy your family. And again, we quote here on page 6, we have 4 quotations of how it destroys a household. And he gives Chizdim, Sota, and 3b, gives the analogy like a worm in a sesame plant. There's nothing else left. If you don't have patience for your spouse, you don't really have a marriage. If you're a teacher, you can't be a teacher. This is from paragraph C. An impatient person can't be a teacher. It's from Ovis in 2.5. And if you want to really be effective in a normal sense, again, we're not dealing with the anger that comes, an enemy is coming. But on a regular day-to-day, minute-by-minute situation that you have, if you want to be effective, speak softly. They carry a big stick, but speak softly. Up until now, we've discussed anger. The trigger of anger is our frustration. The sense is we feel boxed in, angst. We'd like to have more of this or more of that. We'd like to have a greater place in the world and greater recognition and more pleasure and more this and more that, and we can't. And we express it with this anger, with this rage. There are other reactions, though, that we may have to our frustrations. Sometimes we simply give up and declare defeat, admit defeat. Others, I'm stuck. Unfortunately, the admission of defeat creates in its wake depression. You're lost. You're a prisoner of war. You become lethargic. You lose your will to live. Research has shown a very strong link between depression and anger. You're angry. Can't do anything about it. You just give up. There are situations that in order for a person to cope and to keep his sanity, what he does is that he pretends that he's not angry. He goes into denial. There's really, underneath all of this, on a subconscious level, there's a tremendous amount of anger. And he feels miserable. But he's just blocked it out of his mind. So in a sense, he can't even deal with this. I mean, this is the things that one goes to a therapist for, just to bring it out. There are other means, though, even when it's on a conscious level, and you feel you can't, for whatever reason, you can't express your anger and you're stuck. But we could fight back on other levels, some of them very vicious levels. One level, the psychologist describes, is the passive-aggressive mode. In other words, you can't fight, but like what Gandhi did in India, and he was very successful through his efforts, the people of India achieved independence. What he had was passive resistance. And we often do that. Have you noticed people that are chronic latecomers? They're always latecomers. Why are they always late? Because it's their means of asserting control. Don't push me around. I'm going to do it on my time level. And they're always late. And they make you wait. So this is their way of exercising control. And it's really a subdued form of anger. Then there are those that are sarcastic. You know, always make these snide remarks, always putting you down with a little smile. It's also, they don't have, whatever reason is, they can't let it out, but they're frustrated. They're jealous of you, or they have problems here and there, and they just reek of the sarcasm. Again, it's just another sublimated form of anger. We have a situation what we call the stereotypical Jewish mother of secular literature. The one that's always creating all this guilt. You'll be sorry at my funeral. This is a tremendous means of control, especially if you have sensitive children. It doesn't make some great relationships and creates a tremendous amount of pathology. But it's a way of expressing your anger without screaming. You just kill them with kindness. There are other ways of compensating. The person here is not depressed, in the sense he's not lethargic. He has given up, though. And what he's become is become a martyr. Ever see these martyrs? They're just busy collecting all the grievances, all the, this one did this to me, and that to me, and this to me, and that to me. So at least you gain exalted martyr status, you know, if nothing else. Again, it's really in a sublimated form of anger. Like, you can't do anything else. You might as well be a martyr. You know, it reminds me of this cute story. Art Linkletter used to have a show, and he used to interview kids. So he once asked on his show, one of the little kids, what's a good sport? How would you define a good sport? So the kid said, you know, it's someone who's not good in sports like baseball or basketball or handball. So the only thing left for him to be is a good sport. In a certain sense, here's a person who's can't do anything. He's frustrated. Nothing works for him. And he's miserable. So at least he can become a martyr. Yeah. There's yet another means of how we deal with our anger. And the reason I'm going through all this list is to show that anger doesn't mean just shouting. We express our anger in many different ways. Bigotry is a form of anger, that we project all our problems and all our shortcomings on someone else. And that someone is the cause of all our problems. And if once we've located that problem and focus all our anger on this target, which is a convenient target, so at least we can't express it to our boss. And as we started in the beginning of the lecture, we can't express it to our wife or kids. So who's left? So we express it to some person of some group that others also find, for whatever reason, find fault with them. And all of our anger then projects on these poor people, even though it's totally unwarranted. Bigotry is a form of anger. I don't know how many of you watch boxing. Hockey, get more. Many people find a release for their anger, because they don't deal with the anger, but they find a release for their anger in competitive sports. And have you ever seen the scene, and maybe it's in your own home. You see a boxing match, it's on television. And you see all those who are watching it are also moving with their hands. Yeah, give it to them. Yeah, 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 back to them. You get them, what's all this? Because they have this, all this thing. They can't do it on anybody else. So they make this world of make-believe. And they get it all out, and it feels great. You ever see when there's a fight amongst the hockey team, is how they're cheering. It's the hushagas. It's crazy. But it's the screams of people who are directing their anger. They're angry for a lot of... I don't believe someone who's a very happy individual, everything's going, but he's not angry. He's just humming the song track for The Sound of Music. I mean, he is just happy. I don't see him being an avid fan of hockey or boxing. Someone who's miserable or frustrated, he loves it. This is it. He gets all this anger out. What we've done is we went through the causes of anger. We went through how expressing anger could destroy you. We went through a whole list of different forms of sublimated anger. In other words, there's substitutes for anger. I'd like to deal with the problem, but still, how do you do in a constructive sense? Not in the sense of make-believe, not sublimating it through sarcasm or pouring guilt on your hapless children or becoming a martyr, but how do you deal with frustration in life? And this is the next part, which I call calm. C-A-L-M. The C for calm is called care. We discussed the idea that we discussed the three P's. The first one is power. Since I don't have enough money, I don't have enough control, I feel frustrated. From the Jewish point of view, we have to realize that we're not alone in this world. There's a God in this world. He created the world, He created us, and He takes care of each and every one of us. He's concerned with the day-to-day, minute-by-minute activities of each and every one of us. And see for care, I'd like to read with you, it's on page 6. This is taken from the Talmud from Yoma 38b. No man can touch what is prepared for his fellow, and no one kingdom does not interfere with the other. One position of power doesn't interfere with the other, even to the extent of one's hair's breadth. In other words, what's basher for me, what's destined for me, I'm going to get. Whether it's my career, it's my position, no one can take anything away from me. One of the major reasons why We are frustrated. Sense is, well, he has it and I don't. Why can he have this and that and the other thing or she and I don't? But if a person really came to grips with what we call Jewish reality, with the Torah's view of man, you're getting exactly what you need at this point in time, because God is taking care of you. You're not going to miss. If your competitor starts a business, you're not going to lose a penny. God's taking care of your competitors, taking care of you too. We discussed last session about worry. If a person truly trusts in God and doesn't worry, he creates a very special relationship with God. To the extent we put God in our life, God is with us and is involved in our life. He's always there, but we invite him in, so to speak. The important thing, the sea of calm, is care. We show God cares for us. So we should feel lost. The thing is, you know, what's going to happen to me? You know, he's taking this away from me, or that's taking away from me. I'm so far in my career, and I've reached a ceiling, and I can't go any further, and this one's the cause, and that one's the cause. From the Talmud's point of view, it is calm down. Do what's right. Everything will come. We discussed three P's. One of the P's is pride. One of the reasons we get angry is because we're stepped on. Someone makes a callous remark. We're devastated. But again, from the Torah's point of view, we are worth too much to be intimidated by a callous remark of someone that doesn't begin to understand our worth. And here, an A of attitude, therefore every single person is obliged to say, the world was created for my sake. This is a quote from the Talmud, from a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. We are required to constantly say, if I'd be the only person on earth, it would be all worth it, because I am that important. And this is how the Torah looks at every single individual. If you're so important, the world was created for you. A little remark by some stupid person shouldn't affect you, because you're worth all that much. The third P is pleasure. And this is the L of Kahn, C-A-L, is life, the Jewish view of life. And again, I'd like to quote, this is also taken from Avos. Akavya ben Mahalalel said, apply thy mind to three things and you'll never come to the power of sin. You should know where you come from, where you're going, and before whom you're destined to give an account and reckoning. Where did you come from? From a fetid drop. We all come from sperm. Our beginnings are very humble. And where are we going to? From a place of dust, of worms and maggots. And before whom are we destined to give an accounting? Before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. As we said before, the real we, the real people that we are, you close your eyes and who am I? It's not my hands, it's not my feet. Where's the me? The me is a spiritual being that's on this earth for a short period of time and will leave and go to another plane. And we're just passing through. And this is a story I told in the beginning of the lecture series a year and a half ago. This is one of the great rabbis of Eastern Europe. It was Yisroel Meir Kagan, known as the Chofetz Chaim. And once an American, someone who had grown up in Eastern Europe and emigrated to America, made his fortune and came back to the old country, to see his home, to see the great personages of Eastern Europe, came to the Chofetz Chaim. He came to his home and was shocked by the poverty in his home. I mean, he didn't have any furniture. He had tables and chairs, but he didn't have furniture. And he blurted out to the rabbi, and he says, Rebbe, avu zah mebel. Rabbi, where's your furniture? I don't see any furniture here. The Chofetz Chaim didn't respond immediately, but as the conversation went on, the Chofetz Chaim asked his guest, by the way, where's your furniture? He says, my furniture, it's back home in Chicago. He says, I'm just passing through. I carry my furniture with me. He says, I'm also just passing through. He says, we're passing through life. In the Jewish viewpoint, the purpose of... this is not paradise, if you haven't gotten the idea yet. You know, this is not Gan Eden. This is not paradise. We're just passing through. Pleasure has a place, just like pleasure has a place in the workplace. We'd like to put in nice furniture and nice music and to make the working conditions wonderful, that we should be productive. But the importance of a pleasurable environment in the workplace is that we should be productive. The importance of pleasure in life is that we should be productive. Take our positive experiences and translate them into positive things in our own life, that we should be more sensitive people and giving people and happier people. But pleasure is not an end in itself, and definitely not on this world. In terms of this world, we're just passing through. And this is Mishnah. Where do we come from? Where are we going? Ultimately, what remains is our souls. There's a beautiful story that the Medrash relates, that King Solomon went to an artisan, went to a craftsman, and he says, you know, I need something to create a certain sense of equilibrium in my life. You know, sometimes I get too happy. You know, and sometimes I get depressed, I get overly sad. How do I reach that balance in my life? The artisan crafted a ring for the king. And on that ring, there were three Hebrew letters. Gimel, Zayin, Yud. They stand for three Hebrew words. Gam, Ze, Yavor. This will also pass. You get too happy and you lose yourself. Oh, you know, the chasna is going to be over soon. You have to pay the bills. You know, the wedding's over. And the person gets overly depressed and sad, you know. That passes as well. It's that sense that we're just passing through gives us the power to realize, listen, if we're frustrated, we can't get all the pleasure. Well, you know, we're just passing through. If you're on an airplane and you just don't like your seat, or you don't like the people behind you or in back of you, or you're in front of you, you don't like the food that's served, generally we don't get broken. We don't fly into a rage. Because, you know, in another hour or two, the flight's over, I'm getting off. We're getting off, too. So if you enjoy the ride, and there's a lot of good things on this flight. So again, the Jewish attitude about the three P's, of power, pride, and pleasure. In terms of power, you have to realize, is if you don't have the power that you feel you need, God's in charge. He knows what you need. And if you don't have that sense of pride and people are pushing you down and making your lift, treating you like a shmata, she's like a piece of rags, as you realize you are too choshev, you are worth too much to take these snide remarks to heart, because after all, the whole world is created for you. And if you have that frustration that you're not getting all that pleasure of life, remember the Chofetz Chaim says, we're also just passing through. The last, and this ends, is M, for mastery. As we said, we're just passing through. So what are we doing here? You know, we know when we're going on a flight, at least we know we're supposed to sit in this seat and don't complain too much to the stewardess, and we'll get off and everything will be fine. What are we doing on this flight? What's the purpose of life here? And again, according to the Torah's view, life is one big challenge. We're constantly challenged. We're challenged at the workplace and we're challenged at home. And we're challenged that there are constantly many things that want to make us angry. What we should do is overcome that challenge. There's a beautiful story about an ambassador who was appointed by a king to a certain country, and he was given all the list of rules, what he wants his ambassador to do. And at the end, he told his ambassador, one thing above all, never take off your shirt in the presence of the king to whose throne you're the ambassador. Never take off your shirt. No matter what he does, never take your shirt off. He's crazy. He shouldn't take off his shirt. What's wrong? Take off his shirt. Okay, fine. He comes to the court of the other king. He presents his papers. Everything is fine. The king looks at him. The other king looks at him and says, "This is terrible." He says, "How does the king that sent you send me a hunchback as a representative?" He says, "A hunchback? I'm not a hunchback. Of course you're a hunchback. Everyone sees you're a hunchback. I'm not a hunchback." He says, "I know you're a hunchback." He says, "I'll wager you," he says, "take off your shirt." He says, "I'll give you $5 million. He says, "Show me you're not a hunchback." He says, $5 million. He'll give it back to his king. He took off his shirt, walked around, says, showed he wasn't a hunchback, says, "You're right." Got dressed again, he gave him the $5 million. He's very happy. He made $5 million for his king. A week later, a messenger was sent to the new ambassador to recall him. He was recalled. He comes back to the king that had sent him. He says, "What's the problem?" He says, "I told you not to take your shirt off." "Yeah, but he gave me $5 million. This is not Vena. This is you fool. He says, "I wagered him $50 million that you wouldn't take your shirt off." We are constantly being challenged. Anger is one of those challenges. The trick in life is to realize that it's a challenge. And you know that it's a challenge, then you know it's something to overcome. The last quote here, on page 7, the bottom of the page, is "Ezehu Gibor, who is considered strong." This is from Ovos 4a. "He who subdues his personal inclination, who controls himself." And there's a quote from Proverbs. "He who is slow to anger is better than the strong man. And a master of his passions is better than the conqueror of a city." Strength is to conquer yourself. To realize all that's happening to you on the workplace is that challenge that was made by the other king to show you're not a hunchback. You know, you better keep your shirt on. I just to leave you with this one story. If there's one thing that we could compare why the challenges of life, basically, it's not to hockey and it's not to boxing, it's to golf. Because when you play golf, each one has their own handicap. Everyone's playing on their own level. Which reminds me, says there are many different kinds of handicaps. Some are real and some are imaginary. And I'd like to tell you the following story. There was once a game that was played between one of the great masters of golf and a rank amateur. This master had won countless tournaments. The amateur was a miserable player. As they began to play, the master asked the amateur, "What do you want your handicap to be?" "So we'll play with that handicap. It's 30 points, 25 points, 50 points. That's the handicap." "And you," says, "knowing that," in other words, "so my 70 is equal to your 120. Says, "No, I don't need any handicaps. I just need a 2 gotcha handicap." Says, "What's a 2 gotcha handicap?" Says, "You'll see. That's nothing. You'll see." Okay. Anyways, the professional teed off the first hole, swung back, and as he was about to complete it, the amateur got behind him and says, "Gotcha!" After that, after that next 17 holes went without incident. And the professional lost terribly. Terribly. And after the game was over, says, how does a person like you, who's won so many tournaments, how could you have lost to such a person? And his reply was, have you ever tried playing golf always waiting for the next gotcha? Says, many times the handicaps and the challenges of our life are just this make-believe gotcha. If you look at life in different eyes, if you realize we're just passing through, the many of the things we deem important are not so important after all, that we really do have, we're worth a lot more than people think we are. It doesn't make a difference what people think of us. And our frustrated pleasures and power are really meaningless. And true greatness is greatness of the soul and mastery of oneself. You'll overcome the gotcha handicap. Okay, good evening.
We will have questions in one moment. First of all, Rabbi, I'd like to express to you that you challenged us tonight to greatness. We came to the conclusion that anger controls how great we can become. When we are angry, we're miserable, no one wants to talk to us, we're alone. When we are not angry, we are happy, people approach us, talk to us, and everything is working out in a beautiful way. What I'd like to state is one thing. There's a problem with one thing that maybe you didn't touch on it. See what's happening? Many of us get angry sometime in our lives, and we get angry at someone, and we get egregious us, you know, it eats us up for a day or for a lifetime. And the problem is that the party that you're angry at doesn't even know you're angry at that party. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't mean to do anything. He's not aware that you're angry at him. So you're miserable for a number of days or years, and the other party is not even aware of it. Make sure it doesn't happen to you. Questions?
Okay, we have a lot of questions, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let me address your question. You know, a person's angry. You've been stepped on. You've been cheated. The other person doesn't even realize it, doesn't know you're angry. What are you supposed to do? There's a portion of the Torah that deals with this. There's a sentence in the Torah that says, "Sisnos aficho bevavecho." You shouldn't hate your friend in your heart. "Hechech techiach asam isecho." You should rebuke your friend. If you have those feelings, and you have to express them when you're not angry, when you're calm and you're controlling yourself, the best way, I mean, if you feel that you can control yourself, is to speak to that person and tell them, you know, I'm disappointed in you. Don't make the other person angry. Because, you know what? You know, I'm very hurt by you. You've done this, and I expected a lot more from you. I know you could do a lot more. If you give musar, in other words, you try to rebuke a person and speak to a person in a way that lifts the person up, but at the same time conveys your hurt, generally people rise to the occasion. I mean, it depends, but generally if it's a person you feel you could speak to begin with, people rise to the occasion. And generally they say, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it. And you create a situation that hatred that's burning in you is dissipated. And that's just the general way of, you know, as far as of dealing with this. Okay, are there any questions?
Any questions?
Would you like to come to the... Yeah, so everyone can hear this.
Included in the sites in the handout was the Rambam's suggestion that if someone feels that it's important for him to rectifying others, whether it be in his family or in the community or at work, that he feign anger and do it like an actor. A few sentences later, though, he mentioned that people who are angry often deny that they're really angry, and they feel that they're just being actors. Isn't that a trap?
The denial that I was speaking about is because we have these frustrations, we deny we have the frustrations. We deny that, oh, everything is fine, you know. It didn't hurt me that much, you know, or I don't feel that bad. And since you fool yourself, it really is a tremendous hurt, you know, this angst that you feel. But what you're pretending is you're masking your feelings. Here, the Rambam, Maimonides, is dealing with how to project those feelings that you have of anger, of disappointment, of frustration you have to the other person, correct that other person. How are you supposed to do that? And he says, don't do it when you're emotionally involved. It should be only when you're cerebrally involved. And the show, which you want to make the to scare the person or whatever, that show should be only an act.
I know, in my own case, there have been occasions on which that I really and truly and honestly felt that I was feigning anger. I felt I was totally in control. It was only an hour later that I still felt something. You know what? I wasn't really in control. And maybe that's just an excuse to act out anger that we're really feeling, when we pretend that we're really in control and we're feigning.
Let me just explain that. I now understand what you're saying. According to the Rambam, what the Rambam is speaking here about acting is a really midas chassidus. It's going beyond the letter of the law. Maimonides said there are times one is allowed to be angry. It's naturally to be. It's natural. And one is not required to take that element of anger away from one's life. In those situations, even in those situations, to ensure that it doesn't go out of hand, he says, feign the anger. In your situation, even if had there been an element of true anger here, sinishkefel, it's okay.
We have another question over here.
Yeah.
I guess when you were talking about sarcasm and anger building up, I think I identified myself a little bit. I used to be real quiet and real shy, and I'm obviously not very shy anymore. But I sometimes say things sarcastically to stir things up and create anger for myself for some reason. I don't really know why. And I seem to deal with it when you talked about it, and I was just wondering how I can maybe cut that or how I can control it.
You know, anger, we spoke about the ills of anger, you know, the ills of rage, how it eats a person up, or even how even these subtle forms of anger are really a form of aggression. But there's a silver lining to the cloud, because as long as you're feeling angry, you're feeling. When you feel the need to be sarcastic, it's a symptom, like something is wrong. That I do have that sense of frustration, that I'm not getting what I want, that I'm not where I want. And I think that warrants what really the next step is you have to write down a list of yourself. Sit down and write a list willing of all the things you're dissatisfied with. Like, what bothers you? And writing is a good thing. No one sees it. You know, and you have this list, and you keep on writing all these things that bother you. And once you see it in front of you, and you got it out, it's like the catharsis. You see it, it's out of you. You can deal with it. And again, it says there are certain things. For instance, here we dealt in the job situation of philosophizing it. In other words, that's not the only way to deal with it, of course, in a positive way. If you're in a situation where you're constantly belittled and you're not appreciated and it bothers you, there's a limit, you know. I mean, a person struggles his whole life to become, you know, to become perfect. It's a struggle. It's a lifetime struggle. But if you're in a situation where you're a job like that and you feel that your skills are such that others would you know, that you're not being recognized and you could go a lot farther. Well, I think you should make a good resume of yourself and send it out. It's these are good symptoms. There is a positive thing of the anger because now you can come to grips with that there's a problem. Otherwise, you don't even know there's a problem here. And the sense is, when you have that anger, you say, you know what, maybe they aren't paying me enough. Maybe I'm worth a lot more. And then you could start working on it. So on one level, how do you change yourself? But on the other level, it's sometimes very positive. Change your environment. It's a good sign. If pain, how terrible it is one of the beautiful creations that God made. It shows that we're sick. It shows that there's something wrong. If we are sarcastic and we are angry, it's like pain. And we can start working on it and doing something about it.
We hope you enjoyed this lecture. For more information about this lecture series and to order our audio cassettes and the accompanying outlines, please write to the Jewish Heritage Foundation, 15220 West Lincoln, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237, or call 1-800-797-7729.